This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Eun Teck. For the longest time, the general perception is that Peninsular Malaysia is free from earthquakes because we are far from the Pacific Ring of Fire. But the recent earthquake in Sabah had some experts re-evaluating this claim. Dr. Afros Ahmad Shah is an assistant professor of structural geology at University Brunei Darussalam, and he is here to clarify whether Klang Valley would be hit by an earthquake in the near future. Dr. Afros, welcome. Let's start with the recent Sabah earthquake. There were some news reports that state scientists saw it coming, that Kota Kinabalu would be hit. Mm-hmm. Did we know that it was coming? And if we did, how much did we do to be prepared for it?
I think, as what I understand, there are actually some studies where they have mapped the fault, which was, you know, going just close to Sabah. It was actually a big fault. So I'm not really sure whether that was, you know, these administrative people, whether they knew it or not. But definitely the scientific community has actually mapped those faults, not a whole track of that fault, but definitely very close to the Sabah. So there was a potential for that, because this is not the first time that Sabah got hit by earthquakes. There are earthquakes that Sabah has seen, I think, many other earthquakes in the past. Maybe not that as big as this one, but definitely there were earthquakes. So if this area was active and you know it, I think people should have actually tried to understand why we got these earthquakes here and then prepare accordingly. So I think that was missing.
Are earthquakes hard to predict? Because earthquakes have happened in Sabah before.
Okay. One is prediction, which, as you said, prediction. Prediction is something you have to be very specific about time. As earth scientists, we don't really do that. Most of the people don't really put much effort in prediction now because it's hard. Prediction of earthquakes is extremely hard because you need to know everything about a fault or even different, you know, the faults go for long, it go for hundreds of kilometers, some faults. So they can behave differently. The segments, they can behave differently. So, and also because the faults go down depth, so maybe 15 or 16 kilometers down, some may go deeper. So you don't really see them, how they behave down. Therefore, there are many constraints in predicting the behavior of faults. That's why we are now concentrating more on forecasting. Whether we know, for example, there is a fault, active fault in Sabah, so you're saying that, okay, this may get activated again. So forecasting is now becoming very popular in earth sciences, and people are concentrating on that and thinking that, so based on the length of the fault, you can roughly say how big an earthquake can happen in that area. So based on that, you can actually make a quick estimate of what magnitude of earthquake is going to hit, and then you can ask the authorities to be prepared for this kind of disaster.
So we know the extent of, we can pinpoint maybe a time frame, but not the specific date and time. Is
exactly,
that right?
Yeah. So you cannot pinpoint that. We are working on that, but it's going to take more time. You know, but let me tell you one thing. You know, before going, I think people have this. They put more effort in prediction. I don't really, myself. I tell you why. Let's say that we are predicting earthquakes with an accuracy of one, like accuracy of a day or even 1 hour. What is that going to do on ground? The reality on the ground is that most of the areas which have got hit by earthquakes or which have the problem of earthquakes, they are not, the buildings are not being built. Even though they have the history of earthquakes, for example, we have the history of earthquakes in India, we have the history of earthquakes in Pakistan. There was 7.6 earthquake magnitude, not really big, but it actually destroyed more than 80,000 people, and most of the houses are gone. So, and that has a history of earthquakes. Why people have not taken that into consideration? Now, if I tell you, okay, tomorrow in Muzaffarabad, in the earthquake, I'll tell you, okay, tomorrow I'll predict there will be an earthquake within 1 hour. What'll happen? Tell me, what'll happen then?
We can evacuate?
You can evacuate, but you can't really save people.
Right.
Do you understand? Yeah. Evacuation is fine, but what I'm saying is that it is going to take a lot of time. And not only a lot of time, there is possibility that we may not come closer to minutes or hours. And if you know that is true, then why you bother about prediction? It's better to forecast them and say, okay, this has the potential of earthquakes, prepare for the worst scenario.
So why do we rebuild on places where we know earthquakes will happen again?
Well, that is the problem. There are many problems. One of the problems is corruption. Other problem is poverty. If a country is poor, for example, if I am poor, I don't care about safety. I care first about food. So the moment you get food into your stomach, then you're fine. And then later you care about the safety, right? So unless and until people are safer, you see, you know, there's a very big pattern about the damaging earthquakes in countries. Like, let me take example of Pakistan again. 7.6 earthquake. And it actually killed 87 people. If the same magnitude hits Japan or California, I think nothing's going to happen because they build structures which can withstand earthquakes. So we have to take into account into these and yeah, Japan is, you know, economically well off. California is economically well off. So, but Pakistan is not. That's Muzaffarabad, that area is not. They are now, you know, in that area, people are now taking care of that. But there have been many problems. As I said, the poverty is a problem. There are corruption widespread. And there are other constraints also, awareness, education, whether people are in Japan, most of the people know what a fault means. And they can pinpoint, you know, they can show you fault. But in other countries, in most of the developing countries, unfortunately, get hit by earthquakes, and we have a lot of damaging earthquakes around them. There's a big risk for the people.
So where do earthquakes happen and why?
Okay, why do earthquakes? Okay, now for that you need to go back into in understanding. Yes, why do we have faults on first place? Why do the faults are there? Earthquakes occur if, for example, if you have a rod, you know, the brittle means it can break, just like a biscuit, which can break. And if you got a paste, for example, if I force biscuit, it's going to break, right? I'm applying force. And that force is being applied to that biscuit or something which is brittle, and it breaks it. And if I take now paste, apply exactly the same force, what will happen? It'll fold. It'll not break. Same thing happens to the earth. Earth is crust, the top portion, just like an egg. Egg has a crust on the top. So just think about that egg, the top of the egg, which is the brittle part, is actually Earth's crust. It actually behaves as brittle. So if you're applying a force, the force comes from within the Earth. It's mainly what you call a mantle within the Earth, which drives these, what you call the tectonic plates. So Earth has different tectonic plates, and those tectonic plates continuously move. Some move towards each other, some move away from each other, some, you know, cross. So because of their movements, what you get is you get different kinds of faults, right? It's just like, for example, if you're stretching your paper, what will happen? It will tear. So that means you're applying force to the paper to tear it off. Similarly, if the crust tears apart, the tear is called fault. You know, it's called fault in geology. So the faults are there because there is a tension within the earth which tries to release that tension. And within the earth, because it's brittle, it goes through, you know, on the top portion is brittle, it actually comes in terms of faulting. So faults are extremely important for us because they are releasing a lot of energy from the earth, which otherwise is almost impossible. Think about it. If there are no faults, then something else will happen. Maybe we'll get a big blast, right? We get a bigger problem than faults. So in that sense, faults are good because they are releasing energy in a very systematic manner. And volcanoes, for instance, volcanic eruption is also coming up because of the energy within the earth. You know, you got the rocks getting melted and then comes up. So that's also an expression that the earth is very dynamic inside. And then you got all that energy which just comes up in different forms. We have all that around us, and as I said, faults are very good in that they are actually, you know. So what we have to do, we have to live with faults. They are there. You cannot stop earthquakes. It's impossible, right? Nobody on earth, I think no geologist on earth will tell you, okay, now, tomorrow, we'll stop them. You can't. Even if you stop them, you are risking your own life, because the energy is there, it has to get out, right? So the faults are there just because there is energy that has to get released, and it is a very systematic way of releasing that energy through these cracks, what you call cracks at the moment, that are called faults. And that's why they're there.
Okay, so we know enough about the faults and the plates to know that earthquakes will happen and they're here to stay. But we don't know enough about it to predict to a minute or to an hour when it will happen. How much do we know about the earthquake, and is it a matter of technology?
I think, you know, we have, starting from the earthquake science from the very beginning, if you think, you know, people had a lot of, I'm telling you the history of earthquake science. People had a lot of, you know, they used to think that the two bulls are fighting and that's why you had earthquake. Yeah, you have, so you build your science from there. You started from there where we had nothing. And now we have we know a lot about earthquakes now. But yeah, we are not there yet. We cannot pinpoint one reason for earthquakes to say, okay, here is the thing, that's why. Now, when you talk about the behavior, you know, you can, false, that means you can predict anybody if you know everything about that person. For example, I can predict your behavior only if I know everything about you. I don't know which direction you're going to move now. And that can only know if I know everything about you, right? Similarly for the false, you can know about the false if you know the fault behavior. And fault behavior is not just lying at the top. It's actually going down, right? It talks about, we are talking about the plate size, which is a part of mantle also. So you need to think about the Earth as a dynamic planet, and then, you know, then work on all these aspects and try to understand how faults work. On the top, the fault can behave differently. At the bottom, it can behave differently because the energy increases down. It becomes more ductile, in fact, when it goes down up to 10 or 15 kilometers. And on the top, it's more brittle. So the behavior is different. And not only that, so let's say that if one fault is 100 kilometers long. So 100 kilometers can have different segments. It can have 30-kilometer segment. They can behave differently. Right, so we are now. I'm telling you this because a lot of people have worked on this, and we actually know more about this now that how the faults behave differently. And in fact, for example, if there is one fault is about to go, is about to have a fault, this earthquake, and so on. And if some, you know, if a neighborhood fault gets an earthquake, that fault can have earthquake again, because what it happens, because of this tension, it actually hits that fault, and which was already ripe to get. So one earthquake can trigger another earthquake. This is something which is actually new in earth sciences, but we discovered it recently that there is, the faults can actually communicate with each other, and if you hit one guy, another can get trouble. It can actually get activated.
This is different from aftershocks.
You can have, aftershocks is the same fault. I'm talking about different faults. You got one big fault that another segment gets activated, right? So you can have, you know, these faults getting activated because of the, what I'm saying is that all these things are coming up. This is a new science. So things are coming up. We're slowly accumulating science. We're trying to build up on it and then trying to understand it. So it's not easy. I think, as I said earlier, prediction is something which is, for me, is still a dream, right? So let's say, forget about prediction at the moment. We are working on that. We will love to do that. But let's think about whatever we know till now. Start from there and then say, okay, what should we do? I think the best would be to work for the worst scenario, right? If I take the Sabah example, as though there was an earthquake, a small earthquake come and hit Sabah. We think, okay, because small earthquake, let's say there was magnitude 5 we have seen so far, and let's say that we can prepare ourselves for 7. What is wrong in that? I mean, the building, you know, the earthquake-resistant buildings can, I was told that it only takes around about 15% total cost of your building to build, like a cost of your bathroom, to build your earthquake-resistant structures. So why can't you take that risk?
I'm speaking today to geologist Dr. Afros Ahmad Shah about living with earthquakes. Coming up, I'll ask him the impact of climate change and San Andreas. BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. If you've just joined us, on the show today is geologist Dr. Afros Ahmad Shah, and we're talking about earthquakes in Malaysia and how to cope when it inevitably hit us. a lot of the focus is on Sabah, but if you go back 2 years to August 2013, we had a magnitude 3.8 earthquake in Baling, Kedah as well.
Mm-hmm.
Why did an earthquake in the peninsula happen?
There you go. In Malaysia, there are many faults. Sabah, we have faults which are active. In Malaysia, there are also faults, which I'm not really sure whether they are active or not. But geomorphic signatures tell probably they may be showing some activity. And now what you're seeing in Baling, I think I have actually wrote an article on this, I guess, on that earthquake. So if you have a lot of faults in Malaysia, we know they are. What we need to do, the first job that we should do as geologists is to map all of them. And then discriminate which you think looks active and which is not active. We have not done that yet, right? So if somebody tells you, okay, we have no problem, I will be surprised and I will be against that, because you need to produce a data to say if something is right or wrong, right? Something is active or inactive. We don't have a data. I haven't seen that. So maybe there is, but I think we need a very systematic study for the whole of the Malaysia to pinpoint all faults, whether they are active or they are not. You map all of them. Some of them are on geological maps, but they are not. Most of them are not, right? You can see from satellite image there are faults which are not on maps. I have seen myself. So that would be the first thing. And later then, what you say, you are asking a very, very genuine question, which everybody should know. If there is a fault, there is an earthquake, why is it there, right? And it's 3 point, whatever, small or big, but why is it there? So we need to understand that. And the reasons. So generally, we know that earthquakes are energy which gets released. Where from this energy comes up? So the first thing that I would think that should happen to that particular earthquake is that we should know the source of that earthquake, right? And then depth of that earthquake, at what depth it is coming. If it is very deep, we will not generally be concerned, because if they are deep earthquakes, they are not really very damaging. But if it is shallow, that means it's less than 50 kilometers depth, then we are actually concerned, right? We are saying, okay, they may be very damaging earthquakes. So in Malaysia, as I said, this is extremely important. The moment you are done with this, then we will know which area is active or not, and then we'll concentrate more, and then we may put more effort in actually trying to understand more about, doing a detailed study. This is a reconnaissance study. And then detailed study is required where you think there is a potential for earthquakes. Now, think about it. We are, Malaysia is considered tectonically stable. Why? Because we are surrounded, we are on tectonic scale. We are part of the Eurasian plate, and to be specific, it is called Sunda block. It is considered generally stable tectonically. But in India, it is also stable. It's stable, but we got intraplate earthquakes in Bhuj. I think it was, I forgot the 2001, I guess. I forgot the year. But Bhuj was an intraplate earthquake and it killed a lot of people. So within plates, you get earthquakes. Here, don't think that, okay, we are stable, fine. If you are stable, then you have to actually, get that data out to say, if we are stable, yes, we are. If somebody guarantees 100% we are stable, fine, I will be hands off. But if you're not having anyone who takes responsibility for this kind of statement, then we need a data to actually pinpoint all the faults and then try to work more on those which we think probably will get activated.
Right. Does climate change affect earthquakes at all?
Climate change.
Or human activity.
Human activity, corruption. Right. Directly affects earthquakes. Why? Because, for example, if you've got a building here, right, even if I have a resistant, earthquake resistant, I ask the builder to build, and if the builder is corrupt, right, he will not follow the procedure as it is, and he will use concrete and other material of very bad quality. So what will happen? You will get, this building will get smashed. Right, and we know that happens in developing nations. As I said, poverty and corruption are interlinked. There you have building is getting collapsed quickly. Why? Because the material is just it's very easy to get, just smash it and gone. So corruption is linked to earthquake disasters. You got more disasters coming. People are saying that the earthquake frequency has increased. There are more earthquakes now. Actually, if you got an earthquake now in sea, nothing will happen. There's no one living there. So the what is killing? For example, think about it. If you have an earthquake here and you are in the ground, nothing has happened to you. Mm-hmm. You got a shaking, right? Maybe you like it because it's a dancing thing. But after that, nothing's going to happen. Not really. Yeah, unless it is a tsunami. You are in an area which gets... So the trouble is mainly from buildings, right? So buildings kill people generally during earthquakes more than a shaking or something. So it's mainly buildings who are going to kill you.
So speaking about earthquakes that happen in the middle of the ocean, why do some earthquakes lead to tsunamis?
Because if you have a plate which is sitting on a sea and then you are hitting that plate, what will happen? The whole plate is a huge thing. So whole of this one part of the sea is actually sitting on one plate, just like in Japan. Then you are, the moment you're getting, let's say, 1 meter of slip, 1 meter of movement on that fault, that's going to, you know, create a wave which becomes a tsunami. As it goes, hits the ground, hits the shore, it becomes intensifies because as the waves hit the shore, they intensify because of the, you know, the ground effect. So within the sea, you will not have trouble. If it is very deep, no problem. But the moment it comes to the shore, it actually intensifies. It's, you know, the amplitude becomes very high and it can hit very high. So a small wave can amplify as it reaches the shore, you know, right? So these, yeah, tsunamis are created because they are the plates which are under sea and the fault under sea that can create tsunamis. Yeah, we have seen it several times now. And it has happened in the past so many times. I think the oldest probably is in Chile, which was 9.6, I think, very big earthquake. They have, you know, it was done by paleoseismology, which is quite a thing that we should actually do in Malaysia also, in coastal areas, trying to know, had we seen anything before? I mean, what is wrong with that? We haven't, that's what I'm saying, we have not created a data set to know whether we have any problem, forget about Malaysian surrounding, maybe from Indonesia or something, right? So we need to know all that data. And that for that, I think we seriously need to work on it and create a data set.
So before you moved to University of Brunei Darussalam, you used to work in Sarawak.
Yeah.
Is our government tapping on your expertise or people working in your field?
You know, okay, let me tell you the secret. I applied for a grant to be, you know, not with the government, but that was an internal Garden Sarawak grant. And the person who... So I wrote the title, I can show you, still the emails. The title of the grant was Earthquake Geology of Malaysia, right? And that was the main... That's what I'm talking about, the whole thing. I was thinking the whole thing will be covered in that. So I submitted that grant to him. It was an internal grant from my institute. So what happened, after some time, I got an email saying that your grant got rejected. I was like, why? There was no reason. They did not give me any reason. And then I asked the person concerned. I told him, okay, tell me what happened. Why are you rejecting? Because scientifically, if you reject anything, you should tell us. Yeah, they did not tell me the reason. And which was, you know, reviewing, right? Normally you review things, you write it. Okay, what is the review wrong, right? It's good for me because I will learn if my proposal has problems. So then the person came to me. I went to him. He was not there. And then he came to see me. I told him, okay, what happened? And we had a coffee together. He told me in the panel, they're saying that because Malaysia doesn't have earthquakes, that's it. I was like, that's what I want to know. Right? So in the panel, the people who probably they were not geologists who are evaluating them, they said, okay, there's no harm of earthquakes, and they have got the bad, what you call this, education. Now think about this is a person from faculty, he is a professor. So the person, even in the university level, have this kind of a attitude, or in fact towards earthquake disasters, or towards in fact the education of this, that they just ignore these things, which is very bad, right? Think about the common people. So that's why I always go to these talks, right? Even I mean wherever, because public awareness is extremely important, and if you don't have that, you'll be in trouble. So here I got a problem just because they're not aware about the problem. Okay.
So Are there research being done when you were working in Malaysia? Are there research being done into mapping out the plates of Malaysia, as you mentioned earlier?
You mean the faults?
Yeah.
I think some people have done, but it's not, there are some journals which are well researched journals. I haven't really seen much in those journals. Maybe some people have worked on small scale, but not on big scale, because we haven't seen because you run this radio station. I'm not really sure if somebody has actually, you have contacted someone from Malaysia who's actually working on it. And I haven't read anything, even from newspapers, who will tell us exactly what happened in Sabah or other parts of the Malaysia. So yes, I don't think comprehensively people may have worked on small things, but on a big thing, I don't think anybody has done any work.
Right. So there was a recent Hollywood movie named After the St. Andreas Fault Line. Mm-hmm. Very famous. Much has been written about it. Why has it captured so many people's imagination?
It's good. I haven't.
Haven't watched the movie?
Yeah, you haven't watched.
I haven't watched the movie as well.
Unfortunately, I have two kids, and yeah. It's almost impossible to get 3 hours.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Because I was reading something online, and it was saying there were 41 big earthquakes from that fault line in the last 10,000 years, which if you do like the rough maths, is every 243 years. And now they are in the 315 years since the last big one in the 1700s. Something big that they predicted or forecasted is to be happen in the next 50 years, like one in three or something. What do we do in a situation like this?
So I think, yeah, you got a San Andreas movie. It's very good. If it is catching people's attention. And I'm not really sure, because I haven't watched it, I'm not sure about the science, whether they are exactly showing the real science, and they're showing exactly what is the real science, right? There are people, you know, who make movies and then, you know, not actually show you, put some kind of a masala in that movies. I don't know about this one, so I can't comment on that. But I think, yeah, it is really very good to actually make movies on faults, to make movies on volcanoes, earthquakes. You know, before going to Curtin, I was in Singapore at Nanyang Technological University, where I was working with a very pioneer geologist, Professor Kerry C, who has done a pioneer work on San Andreas Fault. I'm not really sure whether they have cited him or not, but he has done pioneer work on that fault. And I would have expected him to be in the movie. I'm not really sure whether he is there. They are that center, because he has Singapore has done a brilliant job, in fact, in Southeast Asia, where they invested billions of dollars in making this Earth Observatory of Singapore. Which, why would Singapore invest and not Malaysia? Just tell me. I mean, do you have an answer for that? So why would they invest so much money in something? Singapore is much safer than Malaysia, I guess, right? And it's a very small country. People are very less people. Malaysia has a huge population. More concerned, we should be more concerned here in Malaysia, right? But why they invested? I think people there realize that the importance of Southeast Asia, you know, tectonics, and it's not, you know, in earthquakes or tectonic plates or on a, you know, the earthquake, they don't care about boundaries. If there's a fault in Indonesia, it's going to affect everybody around here, right? Probably if it's a very big, it's going to affect people as far as, you know, far-off countries. So geologists don't have boundaries. So I think the Singapore has done a great job in creating a center. At least they are working very nice. There's a brilliant work coming from that group, working around that area, awareness, and they're making movies. Yeah, they're making movies on volcanoes. They're making movies on real movies, documentaries, not like, you know, the masalas. Right. They're making their movies, real people from the persons. We should do that. We should encourage such kind of things, because it's going to aware. The moment once you have awareness, half of the science is done, half of the work is already done. I mean, for example, let's say we are publishing papers in Nature or something, but on ground we're not doing anything. For me, it doesn't make any sense, right? But if you are on ground doing some work and creating some awareness, which is extremely good. I would like tomorrow another movie on this Sumatran fault, which is a huge fault or there is a big another fault this Myanmar, or even the Himalayan faults, right? So you got this Himalayan frontal faults. We can have movies on that. Why not, right? So
So speaking of awareness, maybe we'll end on this note. Mm. How did your awareness begin? How did your interest in geology develop?
When I was a graduate student, I'm from Kashmir, which is, you know, the valley of Kashmir is surrounded by mountains. So because I always see from my window, you know, these small hills just outside my house. So I was really keen on about these rocks, but nobody in my family ever knew about this geology. So it was like, just like my, you know, my interest. I want to do something new. I know, like, rocks are good. I want to study them. That's how it started. And later on, I started working on other things. I think in geology, so that was my interest. I think in geology, what we need, not only in geology, any science, we need interdisciplinary work. We need to work with everybody, like I'm working with you, because it's creating awareness. If I don't work with you, then people will not know. So similarly, you have to work with people who are, you think are remotely connected to that science, but they are actually a very important component of this, right? So if you work together, probably we may come to very close to prediction. If you don't, then I may, yeah, there is a question mark on that, because for me, Earth behavior can only be understood if we have, you know, structural, if we have geologists, we have engineers, we have computer science people, all people who can model very effectively than us, or the mechanical engineers who will actually understand the mechanics of faulting than us. So if we are all on board, then probably we'll come closer, and then we may have something called a prediction inside.
Well, I hope that future comes soon.
Yeah, yeah.
Professor Alfrost, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thanks a lot for inviting me here.
I have been speaking to Dr. Alfrost Ahmad Shah from University Brunei Darussalam, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.